So I'm going to jump right into it. Dr.
Okay.
Nelson, the emotion code. Now, I know you've been doing this for a while. Basic question to start off for those that don't know, what is the emotion code?
Well, The Emotion Code is a book by that name. It's also a method of energy healing, energy medicine. Albert Einstein, around 100 years ago, made a statement. He said, "The medicine of the future will be the medicine of frequencies." If you think about that for a minute, that's kind of interesting. Nikola Tesla, decades before that, said, "If you want to understand the secrets of the universe, think in terms of energy, frequency, and vibration." And because we live in this physical three-dimensional world where things have weight and are solid and things have mass, and we're used to that world, it's challenging for us to wrap our heads around some of the things that physicists tell us are absolutely real. For example, they say that if you could remove all the empty space between all the atoms in a person's body, there wouldn't be too much left. And in fact, if you were to remove all the empty space from everyone's body on Earth, they say you could fit all 8 billion people in the world into a box the size of a sugar cube. Now, to those of us that have been around for a while living in these physical bodies, that just seems ridiculous and it just seems impossible. But yet, that is really the reality of our existence and who we are and what we are. So, emotions are a very, very important part of our lives. I mean, imagine for a moment living in a world where there is no emotion possible. Well, you'd never feel depressed. You'd never feel anxious or fearful. You'd never feel disgusted or frustrated. But you'd also never feel excited, or you'd never feel love. You'd never feel any of those positive emotions either. And so your life would be reduced to a flat line, really. And so if you think about it, our emotions are what really give color to our lives. Now, most of the time when we experience an emotion, of course, there's always some kind of a stimulus that occurs first, right? Someone says something to us, we see something, we hear something, we read something. Some stimulus occurs, and then an emotional frequency, because every emotion is a frequency, just like Tesla said, we start to feel a particular emotion. Maybe someone says something to you and you begin to feel an emotion of resentment. Or maybe you see something and you start to feel an emotion of hopelessness or grief. Well, if we think about those emotions, what is an emotion really? Well, you can define emotions in terms of the chemistry of the emotions. But if you go beyond the chemistry, then you're at the quantum level. And on the quantum level, if you're feeling a particular emotion, let's say you're feeling an emotion of anger, your body now is vibrating at a different frequency than it was when you weren't feeling that emotion of anger. And every emotion has its own frequency, and every frequency of every emotion is different from all of the other ones. So normally what happens is when we begin to feel an emotion, most of the time we acknowledge that emotional feeling that's coming up. And we might feel certain feelings that go along with that, sometimes even physical feelings. We might have certain thoughts that go along with that emotion that's coming up. And most of the time, we simply acknowledge that emotion, and then that emotional energy dissipates and goes away. And the emotional loop, you might say, that emotional experience is over, and you're ready now for the next emotional experience. And that's how it works most of the time. And that's how it's supposed to work. But sometimes we interrupt that process. Sometimes, for example, an emotion is coming up for us, and we make a conscious decision that we don't want to feel that emotion. And so we bury that emotion. We don't allow that emotion to be felt, and we move on and we go a different direction. Sometimes, on the other hand, an emotion comes up, and we decide, gee, you know what? Not only do I feel that emotion a little bit, but I'm justified in feeling that emotion in a very powerful way. And so we artificially enhance that emotion. Usually in those cases, we're embarrassed later because we got so upset, we flew off the handle. We've all done this, right? I didn't need to get so upset about that. That's a situation also where that emotional loop, that emotional experience is interrupted. Another way that the emotional experience is interrupted is simply by having something happen that is overwhelming. Your partner suddenly tells you that he or she doesn't love you anymore. Or you find out that you're being sued by somebody, or a child is in an accident, or a parent dies, or there's all kinds of things that we all experience in life. And those things sometimes can be really overwhelming. In those cases too, because the emotional energy is just so powerful, that can also interrupt that emotional loop, that emotional process. Now, in any of those three circumstances, if you bury the emotion or you artificially enhance it, or if it's simply overwhelming, that emotional experience is incomplete. And the energy of that emotion that was trying to be expressed in the body is still there in kind of a suspended way. And how this really affected me when I was in practice. I went into practice in 1988 as a holistic chiropractor. And I was really obsessed with getting to the underlying causes of my patients' problems. I wanted to know what was really wrong with them. What was really going on? Why were they having these symptoms? And that was just where I was at mentally. I wanted to know what was really happening. But back in the early 1980s, I had become a computer programmer. And I was there for the early days of the personal computer revolution. You're probably too young to remember that, Corey. But
No, I'm not, I'm afraid. Okay. I remember it well. Yeah.
So the IBM PC, when that first came out and so on. In fact, I'll tell you a funny story. I was doing programming work for a company called Computerland. You might remember those.
I remember them, yep.
Right. And I walked into a Computerland one day, and there was a brand new IBM PC sitting on this table. And there were all these guys gathered around, kind of shaking their heads. And I walked up, and I took one of the guys aside, and I said, "What's going on?" He said, "Oh," he said, the guys at IBM are so dumb." And I said, "Why?" And he said, "Oh, they sent us this PC and it's got a 10 megabyte hard drive." And I burst out laughing. Oh my gosh, nobody's ever going to use that much storage, right? So that gives you an idea.
Yeah, that's puny today, that's for sure.
Oh my gosh, yeah. Well, anyway, so because I'd been a computer programmer, when I became a doctor, it gradually began to dawn on me that within each one of my patients was a computer, but a computer unlike any computer that I had ever experienced. If you think about a normal computer, like my laptop that I'm sitting at here, I've got a screen where I can see things, and I've got a keyboard where I can communicate with the computer and so on. And so we would call that a screen slash keyboard interface. If you've got a smartphone, it's probably got a touch screen. You'd call that a touch screen interface. It has a screen where you can see messages and then you can touch the icons. But the human computer that is within each one of us has no screen and no keyboard. And so after many years, it began to dawn on me that the symptoms that we experience are how the subconscious mind or that internal computer communicates with us. It communicates to us through the symptoms that we experience. So, for example, if you're dealing with migraine headaches, well, those are very uncomfortable. Yes, that's a problem. However, that's not the real problem. It never is. That's just a symptom. Now, Western medicine is geared pretty much completely towards alleviating symptoms. And of course, that can be a great thing. If you're really in pain, alleviating that pain, you know, is wonderful. But that doesn't really fix the underlying cause. And so, for example, you know, if you think about driving down the freeway and the check engine light comes on in your car and you pull off the freeway, you find a mechanic, and the mechanic comes back and says, "Well, we found out what the problem was. Your check engine light was on. So we've disconnected your check engine light and you're good to go." Well, you may not be a mechanic, but you'd realize, okay, well, that doesn't really sound quite right. There's got to be something else. And so that's what I have learned over all these years is that the physical and mental and emotional symptoms that we experience, and I mean the depression, the anxiety, the phobias, the panic attacks, the post-traumatic stress disorder, the self-sabotage of all kinds, the weight issues, the physical pain of all kinds, the dysfunction in our bodies with diseases that manifest with well, and there's all kinds of diseases and things like infertility and asthma and digestive disorders and ulcers. All of those things really are symptoms. In fact, if you can't find your soulmate, that's a symptom of something else. If you can't make enough money in your life, that's a symptom of something else. So what I've realized over all these years is that all of these things that we suffer from, all of our dysfunctions really are ways that the subconscious mind is trying to communicate to us that there's something else wrong. And let me give you an example. Many years ago, a man came in to see me. He was about, I don't know, mid to late 40s, I guess. And he was really in severe pain with his back. On a 0 to 10 scale of pain, his back pain was about a 9. And he was talking about his next stop was going and getting surgery. And so, using the emotion code, I was able to communicate with his subconscious mind, his internal computer, and find out very quickly that he had emotional energy trapped in his body. And the emotion, and we use a chart of emotions that contains 60 emotions. And it's divided up into two columns and six rows. Okay, it looks like that. And you can find these online. But I was able to find that this emotion was anger. And the emotion was in happened to be in column A, row 4. And his subconscious mind was able to give me these answers, right? And I'll explain in a minute how we actually communicate with the subconscious. But I asked if we needed to know anything else about this, and the subconscious mind, through muscle testing. Muscle testing is a way, it's a form of biofeedback that enables us to communicate with this internal computer. The answer was that yes, we needed to know more. And so I started asking when this had happened and very quickly found that this had occurred about 20 years before this emotion had become trapped in his body. And he immediately piped up and said, "Okay," he said, "I know what that's about." And I said, "What happened?" And he said that 20 years before he was working for this company and essentially he was wrongly accused of basically embezzling, cooking the books and embezzling. He was absolutely innocent. And there's really no, it's a special kind, I think, of anger when you're wrongfully accused of something that you know you didn't do and you're totally innocent. And he was just so upset about this and also, I think, hurt and, but the anger was very powerful. That emotion of anger, because he chose to enhance it, it got bigger and bigger, and that energy became trapped in his body. That emotional loop could not complete. That energy became trapped in his body and was manifesting all of these 20 years later as a severe back pain. So I swiped a few times down his back with a magnet or with my hand to release that emotional energy, which just took a few seconds. In fact, this whole process probably took about a minute. And the moment that I released that trapped emotion, his pain level went from a 9 to a 0 instantly.
Wow.
And he starts walking around and bending this way and that way. And he was saying, "Wait, where did it go?" The pain was completely gone. Now, this is not an unusual thing at all. We've certified 15,000 plus people now in 80, 100, actually 108 countries around the world as of yesterday that are all finding the same thing. 90% of the physical pain that people have is due to emotional baggage. But here's the interesting thing. Think about what was going on with this guy. Well, A trapped emotional energy is literally, you can think of it as being a ball of pure emotion. Okay. Everything is energy, frequency, and vibration. He's got this trapped emotion. It's a ball of energy from about the size of a baseball, the size of maybe a softball. This is lodged in his low back. And it's been 20 years now. What happens is wherever an emotional energy like this lodges in the body, it will create a distorting influence on the energy field in that area. Kind of like, you're old enough to remember, do you ever take a magnet to one of those old cathode ray TV screens and you see the picture
Oh, yes.
distort?
Yep.
That's exactly what goes on. I can't use that analogy anymore because nobody knows what those are, but so thank you, Corey. everybody else is scratching their head. But anyway, what happened to that guy was that he had this energy, this distorting anger energy affecting his low back all those years. When that energy was released, suddenly that distorting energy was gone. And you see, when you have a trapped emotion, wherever it lodges, the chemical reactions within that area, within that little ball of energy, are going to be affected to some degree, and not in a good way. The blood flow, we think, may be affected to a degree. The lymph flow, the acupuncture meridian energy flowing through that area can be completely stopped by a trapped emotion. So when we release an emotion, all kinds of things can immediately improve, including muscle tone and alignment of bones and so on. But the interesting thing about this was, 2 or 3 days later, this guy came back in to see me again for a follow-up. And he said, my back pain is still gone completely. He said, I still can't believe it. But he said, I need to talk to you. Because he said, when I came in here, I had another problem that I didn't tell you about. He said, for as long as I can remember, I've basically been what you'd call a rageaholic. He said, I'm always yelling at my wife and my kids, and I've got to watch the road rage. I'm kind of a live wire. Things set me off so easily. And he said, I've been to anger management before, it hasn't really helped me. But he said, since you released that trapped emotion of anger for me, I feel completely different. He said, I feel relaxed in this weird way, and things that used to set me off don't set me off anymore. How did you do that? And at the time, I said, well, I really don't know. I had no idea. But here's what we believe now. This guy in this example, he's got a trapped emotion, this ball of anger, right, lodged in his low back. So when a situation comes along in his life where he might tend to feel the emotion of anger, he would slide right into that frequency much more easily, much more readily than he otherwise would have. Why? Because literally part of his body is feeling that frequency, vibrating at that frequency of anger 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. And so if you think about the emotional experiences of your own life and the things that you've been through, have you been through a divorce? Did your parents get a divorce? Have you been through breakups? Did you have difficult job situations? Were you bullied as a child? Did you used to cry yourself to sleep at night? I mean, we all go through these emotional highs and lows. I mean, we lose people, all kinds of things happen. And that emotional energy that we experience during those times can stay with us and then is the single biggest underlying cause of physical pain that exists, which is amazing, but that's what we see. And it's also at the core of every disease process that human beings suffer from. In other words, it's a component of every disease process that we have seen now in about 36 years. We have not seen one disease process where there was not an emotional piece of that puzzle. And so, if you're listening to this and you're dealing with some kind of disease, you've been diagnosed with something, I don't care what it is, they may be telling you that it's fatal. Well, you may be doing everything else right. You might be following all your doctor's orders. You might be taking all the right vitamins. You might be getting lots of rest and sunshine and clean air and everything else. But if you miss the emotional component of your problem, everything else may not be enough. And the emotion code is not a cure for anything. It's just that we have discovered really that emotional baggage, quote unquote, is a real thing. And it's having a huge effect on us. And what's interesting is that it doesn't only affect human beings, It also affects animals. In fact, all of these 15,000 people that have been certified, and of course, hundreds of thousands of others that are doing this on their friends and family members and so on, have found that this works on animals just as well as it works on people. And of course, there's no placebo effect with animals. So it's one of the great proofs, really, of this, that it's real stuff.
I have a question for you. As you were talking, and correct me if I'm wrong, but what a lot of people do is they, and I think you touched on this, suppress their emotions. As you said earlier, we don't want to feel sad. We don't want to feel certain things. And so we hold it in. Hence, it stays with us. So would the advice be, going forward, that we should, when we are emotional, just let it happen, let it out, and don't try to suppress it?
Yes, I mean, remember that the emotions that we experience are coming from the deep subconscious. Oftentimes, what happens is those emotions will come up for us faster, more easily, more powerfully, if those energies are already trapped in the body. So, in other words, let's say that you have a trapped emotion of resentment about someone that you knew years ago. If you get into a situation where you might be reminded of that person, you may feel that resentment coming up, welling up inside of you. In fact, the reason I'm coming up with resentment is because of a story. Middle-aged woman came in to see me, and we were working on her. And one day, what showed up was a trapped emotion of resentment. We traced it back using muscle testing, and this had occurred when she was about 18, 17, 18 years old. And she said, "Okay, I know what that is." And I said, "What was it?" And she said that it was about this cheerleader that she knew in high school. And she said that she just really had a lot of resentment for this girl. And it had been so many years, I mean, over 2 decades since she was in high school. But she said, "If I ever think about that girl, I can feel the resentment welling up inside of me." And she said, "Honestly, I don't even remember why I resented her so much back then, but I still have those feelings after all these years." So we released that trapped emotion, and she came back in 2 or 3 days later, and she said, "You know, last night I was with a friend of mine from high school, and we were talking about the old days, and that girl's name came up, and for the first time in all these years, I felt nothing." We're removing the electrical charge about an event or about a person, about a situation that happened. And it doesn't take away the memory of what happened at all, but it takes away the charge so that you can think about that person. You can forgive maybe that person. You can move on with your life instead of being anchored to the past.
Two things I want to get to. I want to talk about the removing of the trapped emotions. We'll get to that in a second. But one thing you say is that with these trapped emotions inside of us can prevent us from living our full life, and it can prevent us from even feeling love, the way we're supposed to. I relate all of this to my own life. When I was a kid, there was violence in the home. Just as in the case of your example, whenever I think about it, those emotions come right back. I think through my life, it has probably interfered with my understanding of, what real love is all about. I guess what I'm trying to say is I make a perfect client for the services. So talk a bit about that. Why is it that when we have these experiences in the past, these trapped emotions, it's preventing us from being a full person we should be?
Right. Well, primarily it has to do with the heart. And let me explain. Back in the early 1960s, I remember very well when Christian Barnard did the first heart transplant. It was a big deal. You may remember that back in those days. I mean, it was an unbelievable thing, right? That was the beginning of that. And it didn't take too long before doctors that were doing heart transplants started noticing this weird phenomenon, where some of their patients would come back to them and they would report that their taste in music or food or sports had totally changed. Sometimes they'd have memories of being in places that they never in their life had ever visited. And when these people were connected with the family of the heart donor, they would inevitably find out things like, "Well, yes, our son was a baseball player and he loved baseball with all his heart, and now you love baseball, but you didn't like it before, and our son's heart is beating in your chest. How weird is that?" Or things like, "Yes, our daughter visited Paris every year. It was her favorite city in the world, and now you have memories of being in Paris But you have never, ever been there in your whole life. So those are her memories. How weird is that? Now, there are books written about this. It's called cellular memory. It's a very strange phenomenon. But the ancients believed that the heart was the seat of the soul and the source of love and creativity and romance. And they believed that the heart was the core of our being. Well, in the West, those ideas, if they were looked at all, were just looked at as being quaint and outdated notions. And so in the modern world, those ancient ideas from every society, really, every culture anciently, come down to us in the form of a heart-shaped box of chocolates that maybe, if you're lucky, someone gives you for Valentine's Day. But now we're beginning to understand that there's far more going on with the heart than we ever realized before. In fact, it wasn't until the 1970s that they discovered that the heart has a lot of gray matter and white matter in it, just like the brain. It's 40,000 dendrites, or in other words, brain tissue. And when doctors looked and scientists looked at the communications between the brain and the heart, they were expecting to see the vast majority of communications going from the brain in a person's head to their heart. What they found was just exactly the opposite. They found the vast majority of those messages were leaving from the heart and going to the brain, leading doctors to believe that the brains that are in our heads are obeying somehow the messages that are being sent by the brain and the heart. Now, these ancient ideas about the heart, I think that it was natural that those came about. I mean, think about it. If someone is really hurting you or you're really deep in grief, you may feel like your heart is breaking. There's a physical sensation. It might feel like there's an elephant sitting on your chest or like you can't breathe, right?
I felt that.
You felt that before. Yeah, I have too, and most people have. Well, on the other hand, if you're at a, let's say you're at some kind of a performance and there's a person up there that's singing their heart out, quote unquote. And if you look around, what you'll see, if that person is really singing up to their own ability and even beyond, if they're really truly singing from their heart, for example, or performing in some way from the heart, you look around and you'll see people and they'll have their hands over their heart. They'll have tears in their eyes and they're feeling it in their heart. Well, we now know that the heart puts out a magnetic field that surrounds the body, 12 feet in diameter. We also know that when one person is feeling love or affection for another person, their heartbeat can become measurable in the brain waves of that other person. So there's this communication going on. Heart rates will synchronize in this state of love. So what happened was when I was in practice releasing people's emotional baggage, there were times when I would work on a patient and I would release all their emotional baggage that I could find. And there were times when I would come away thinking, I am missing something. There's something else going on. There's other emotional baggage that I know that person has to have, but it's not making itself known. I can't find it. And so one day, my wife had a dream. And as I was trying to help her decipher what this dream meant, suddenly I had what I can only call a waking vision where the room that I was in was no longer there. And instead, I'm seeing this beautiful hardwood floor. And my wife's heart was underneath this floor, was the understanding that came into my mind. I had no idea what this meant. And this lasted for several minutes. It was one of the strangest things that has ever happened to me. And I told my wife what I was seeing and understanding. She didn't know what it meant either. And so, we asked for some help from up above, and I started muscle testing her to try to figure out what this was really about. And the answer that came was that when she was a child, she was born into a very volatile family, and of course, we knew that. But by the time she was about 2 years old, things were rough enough in that house that apparently, her subconscious mind believed that it needed to put up a wall to protect her heart. And so that's exactly what happened. So we found that there was a wall that had been put up around my wife's heart beginning at age two. And this wall was actually made of her emotional baggage. In other words, layers of trapped emotional energies that were surrounding her heart. Now, we asked if we could release this, and the answer was yes. We were able to release one emotion at a time, and sometimes two. It took us a couple of weeks to clear all of these layers of emotions. Remember the old jawbreakers where, you know, you'd suck on it for a while, take it out, and it would be a different color every time? That's kind of what this heart wall is like, right?
Yeah.
And so by the time we got down to the very last emotion, when that last one was released, it was a dramatic change for her. All of her life, she had battled with depression and anxiety. All of her life, she had never really felt like she belonged anywhere. Like if she was with a group of women, friends that she'd known for years and years, she still kind of felt like the odd person out, like she didn't really belong. She was kind of expendable until that last emotion was gone. And my initial thought about this was the weirdest thing I'd ever seen, and that probably just my wife had this because she'd had a lot of other weird things, and she was my guinea pig for many years in practice. And I thought, okay, this is a weird thing. She's probably the only person that has this, but it turns out that about 93% of people in this world have put up this wall around the heart that we call the heart wall. Well, I believe it was the next person that I treated that had a heart wall was a 38-year-old nurse that came in to see me because she had pretty bad neck pain. It's about a 9 on a 0 to 10 scale. She'd seen a couple of other doctors for it. They hadn't been able to help. So she came in to see me as kind of a last resort. Nothing else was working. And as I was talking with her, she told me that she was single. She had not dated in 8 years, and she was never going to date again. She was going to die single, and she was dead serious about this. And, you know, she was an attractive woman. And I said, well, you know, how did you arrive at this? Why do you feel this way? Tell me about this. And she said that 8 years before, she was really deeply in love with this guy who dumped her, cheated on her, broke her heart. And that was it. It was too painful. She was never going to go through that again. And so as a result, she's single. Well, I tested her and found that she had a heart wall. And there were three emotions making up this wall, three layers of energy, three trapped emotions. They all had to do with the breakup, incidentally, from 8 years before. And so when I cleared the last one of those emotions, suddenly, instantly, the neck pain was gone, completely gone. And she was so grateful. And I was grateful, too, that it worked so well. So she leaves my office and doesn't come back. 3 months later, she walks back into my office, and I'll never forget this. I remember I was standing in my hallway, and she walks into the hallway in my office, and I immediately remembered her because I had never met anybody celibate before except, you know, an occasional Catholic priest. And I immediately remembered her, and I said, hey, how are you? I haven't seen you for a while. What's going on? She said, you know, she said, my neck has been totally fine since I was here. But she said, you cleared that heart wall for me, and that really works. She said, about 2 weeks after I was here, I found out my childhood sweetheart has been living right around the corner from me for almost 8 years. And she said, we're dating and we're in love. She said, and I think he's going to ask me to marry him. And I just thought, wow, I thought you were celibate. I mean, so this is not unusual at all. When that wall is taken down, you see, when we fall in love with somebody, when we attract love, when we attract that soulmate into our lives, we're not using the brain up here in our heads. We're using the brain in our hearts. But the problem is, if we've got a wall, if we've got, you know, all these emotions of grief and sadness and sorrow and resentment and rejection, et cetera, that are wrapped around the heart, then it's very difficult for those energies to get out. And it makes it much more difficult for us to really truly connect with other people, to fall in love, to stay in love. And not only that, to be able to create, to manifest that perfect creation that lies within the heart of each one of us. When there's a wall around that heart, it just becomes much, much more difficult. And so, we have on file somewhere over 10,000 testimonials from people from all over the world. And many of those are about this phenomenon where that wall is taken down and suddenly people are able to sell the house they couldn't sell or fall in love. In fact, one of my favorites, just from a couple of weeks ago, an elderly woman in a nursing home, never been in a long-term relationship, never married or anything else, she's kind of in a spinster. She ends up getting her heart wall removed in the nursing home. 2 weeks later, she's in love with the guy about four doors down.
Those are absolutely amazing stories, and I'm feeling better just talking to you about all of this. The heart wall, yeah, it does make a lot of sense, and I think we've all met other people, friends, family, that, and we can tell there's a heart wall there because, and now that you've been talking about this, it makes me aware of the fact that I may have a heart wall myself, and it, it's. Wow, this is really eye-opening, I'm sure, for a lot of people. Doctor, what about the fix? Now, you've talked about the energy. You've kind of touched on ways in which you're able to rectify this. In the case of the man who was feeling rage, you were able to do this quickly, within just a few minutes. So, maybe you could tell us a little bit about, I don't expect you to go into all the details of how that works, but just give us a sense of what it is you do to help alleviate these issues.
Sure, absolutely. Well, first of all, you have to have a way to communicate with the subconscious mind because that's where all the good information is. Consciously, we remember very little, okay? We forget our car in a parking lot. That's a big thing to lose, right?
That is so true.
Right. And the older we get, the harder it is to keep track generally of things. And you think back, I mean, if you're an adult and you think back on your childhood, how much really do you remember? Well, it's fragments, right? It's maybe the highlights, the lowlights. We don't remember much. And so the conscious mind is not a reliable place to go. It's not where the information is. On the other hand, the subconscious mind remembers everything. Every face you've ever seen in a crowd, everything you've ever eaten or tasted or touched or smelled is all in there in that subconscious mind. The whole history of your health or disease, every emotional experience that you have had, it's all logged, but not in the conscious, but in the subconscious mind. So the subconscious mind, what I learned as a former computer programmer was that it's a computer, but it's unlike any computer that we are used to in the modern age. It reminds me of the old Star Trek episode. Okay. I don't know if you're a Trekkie, but
Used to be.
I'm a little bit of one. You might remember the episode where there's a starship captain that gets terribly injured. He ends up in a box. And it's the only thing sticking out of the box is his head, and there's a light on the box. And if you want to communicate with him, you can ask him questions. He can only answer with a yes or no. You remember this?
I
Okay.
do.
Yeah. And so I think it was two beeps for no, one beep for yes, and the little light would light up. He couldn't answer anything except if the answer can be returned in a yes or a no form. Now, imagine if that's how Google worked. Could we still use it? Well, we could, right? But it would take a little more thought, and we'd have to start from the broad and work to the more narrow, right? Well, that's how the subconscious mind is. It can give us yes and no answers. Now, it does that. One of the easiest ways to pick up those changes is through muscle testing. So, for example, if I were there with you, and your listeners can try this at home with somebody. If I were there with you, if I had you hold one arm out, straight out in front of you with your arm parallel to the floor, if I asked you to resist my downward pressure as I push down, on the end of your arm, you should be able to resist me unless you've got some kind of a shoulder problem. But you should be able to resist me and exert some strength there, okay? Now, if you were to make a true statement, a congruent statement, for example, if you were to say, my name is Corey, right? Your name is Corey, correct? If you were to say, my name is Corey, that's a true congruent statement. And if I were to press down on your arm against your resistance, you'd be able to stay strong because that's your body's in a state of congruency. It's a true thing. On the other hand, if you were to make an incongruent or untrue or false statement, or negative statement, if you were to say, for example, my name is Bob, at that point, if I were to press down on your arm, you would not be able to resist my downward pressure. And I would urge all of your listeners to actually try this. It's kind of an amazing thing. So, this is how we can actually access the subconscious mind. So we can ask any question that we want, really, as long as the answer can be returned in a yes or a no. Yes by muscle strength and no by muscle weakness. And early on, having been a programmer and then suddenly realizing that my patients had an internal computer that had access to all the answers, I found that this was just an absolutely invaluable tool to be able to figure out what was really going on with them and why they were having problems. And so my whole career has been dedicated to decoding, to really breaking the code on this internal computer that I believe is the most powerful computer that we know of in the known universe. I believe it's probably orders of magnitude more intelligent than the latest ChatGPT or Claude AI or any of those. I believe that it's divine in nature, and that's why it's so intelligent. And so the amazing thing is that an animal has a subconscious mind too. And so when that animal goes to sleep, its conscious mind shuts down just like our conscious mind. And its subconscious mind is running all of those processes and creating millions of new cells every minute and so on. In fact, let me share one animal story with you, if I
Sure.
could. I was called to work on a horse one day. And this occasionally happened because there was a woman who was very connected with this particular stable down in San Juan Capistrano in California, and she had asthma, and I was able to help her completely get over her asthma 100%. And so a few years after that, she called me, went and worked on a horse. And then sometime after that, I got another call to go work on this other horse. Now, the problem that this horse had was that it was essentially becoming lame, and they couldn't ride it anymore. It wasn't walking normally. Something was wrong. So the veterinarian had come out on a call, looked at the horse, couldn't find anything obvious going on. So then I get this call and I go to check this horse. And so one of the things we teach in the Emotion Code is how you can communicate with animals very easily with their subconscious mind. And so if you can imagine, at the time, here's how I was doing this, okay? Imagine a horse standing there, a nice big horse, and I've got the horse's owner or someone standing with one hand touching the horse, and their other arm is stretched out parallel to the ground, parallel to the ground. And I'm talking to the horse, right? And a horse will always, pretty much have a name. And so I would start by asking, this horse's name was, I think it was Ranger. I said, "Is your name Ranger?" The answer came back strong on this person's arm, right? So, hey, we've got a line of communication opened. And then I asked if there's a trapped emotion that we could release that was contributing to this problem, this lameness. Again, the answer from the subconscious mind of the horse came back strong on this person's outstretched arm. So I used the chart of emotions and started asking what this was. And what we found was that the emotion was actually in column A, row three, and the emotion was sorrow. And so I'm asking more questions. Okay, well, we know what the emotion is. Was it your sorrow about another horse and that went weak? Was it about a human? No. About a dog? No. Cat? No. And I'm kind of running out of ideas. And right then, a bird flies over. And so I thought, well, all right. Was it sad? Was it sorrow about a bird? And the answer on this person's outstretched arm came back rock solid. And I have to admit, I actually burst out laughing, and so did a lot of the other people standing around, because this was all just so weird and it just seemed so strange and kind of ludicrous, right? That a horse would have sorrow about a bird. But the horse's owner was there, and she said, "Wait, wait, wait." She said, "You know what?" She said, "I think I know what this is about." A week before, right in front of her horse's stall, there was a tree with a nest of baby birds in it. And the week before, a baby bird had fallen out of that nest and had fallen down onto the ground and had struggled for its life for a while and died. And she said, "I wonder if that's what this is about." And so I asked the horse's subconscious mind, "Is that what created this?" The answer was yes. Do we need to know anything else about it? No. So I swiped a few times down the back with a magnet or my hand, either one. It's the same either way. And with a horse, I usually start, between the ears and I'll go down to the tail. We did that three times. We're putting energy into what we call the governing meridian, which goes straight down the back. And then I tested, did we release that emotion of sorrow? The answer was yes. There wasn't anything else to work on. So immediately they took the horse and started walking it, and it was absolutely perfect. The lameness was completely gone. And so there are many stories like this. In the Emotion Code book, there's a whole chapter about animals. There's a whole chapter about animals in the Body Code book as well. And we have a new book coming out called The Heart Code. And the Heart Code is specifically about removing these emotions that are wrapped around your heart so that you can free your heart to be able to love again, to create the life you're capable of. And I think it's the most important thing you can do for yourself. Because when I was in practice, I found something interesting. I found that, well, first of all, the last 10 years I was in practice, most of the people that I saw have been told there was really no hope for them at all in Western medicine. People with chronic conditions, things that were not ever supposed to get better, got better. And what I found was that these people all had a heart wall. And sometimes, Corey, what I would do with these people, when they would first come in, I would always do an initial exam. I would check all the organs and glands, chakras and meridians. And most of those things would be out of balance. And sometimes with these people, I would only do one thing. I would just clear their heart wall. And then I would rerun that whole exam. And I'd find that 80% of all those things were now working. It's so powerful.
It is. I think if somebody wants to learn more, to get the emotion code, and correct me if I'm wrong, but the heart code probably addresses that heart wall issue you were talking about.
Yep, and the Emotion Code does as well, and the Body Code book does as well. If you want to, you can go to drbradleynelson.com. That's drbradleynelson.com,
Thank
and
you.
we've got some special offers for the Heart Code book there. It's a pre-order. It's coming out in December, and of course, the other books are available, everywhere books are sold: Amazon, Barnes and Noble, etc. And our main website is discoverhealing.com.
If I wanted to find a practitioner who works under your direction, that would be on the website as well.
That would be at discoverhealing.com, and we've got a Google map of the world. And what's interesting is you don't have to find somebody that lives right next to you, Corey, or down the street, because this is energy medicine. There is no barrier of distance, so you could work with someone. You might find that the ideal person for you is in Singapore or maybe Berlin. Who knows? But the whole world is for you. And yes, now you can also do this yourself. The instructions, they're all in the book, in the Emotion Code. We don't hold anything back. It's all in there. So you can learn the whole process, and you can do it on yourself, all by yourself. But if you want to have somebody help you, discoverhealing.com would be the place to go.
Fantastic. I want to thank you for your time, Doctor. This has been a real eye-opener for me, that's for sure. And I'm sure many of our listeners and our viewers. So thank you again, and good luck with the coming books.
Thank you, Corey. Thanks for having me on.